Southern man, better keep your head. Don't forget what your good book says. Southern change from the common past. Now your crosses are burning fast. Southern man.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Mark Potok, who's the director of the Southern Poverty Law Center's Intelligence Project and editor of its award-winning quarterly investigative journal, Intelligence Report. In addition to editing the magazine and the Hate Watch blog, Potok acts as the key spokesperson for the Southern Poverty Law Center, a well-known civil rights organization based in Alabama. He's testified before the Senate, the United Nations High Commission on Human Rights, and other venues. And the Southern Poverty Law Center recently released a new report, The Return of the Militias, which documents how, after vanishing for nearly 10 years, the anti-government militia movement is surging across the country, fueled by fears of a black president, the changing demographics of the country, and fringe conspiracy theories increasingly spread by mainstream figures. Welcome to Background Briefing, Mark Potok.
Oh, real pleasure to be back.
And these killings of Texas prosecutors, first of all, an assistant prosecutor in Kaufman County was killed. He was fearing for his life, changing his routine. He was killed brazenly on the courthouse steps. And then after going public at a press conference, his boss, the district attorney, Mike McClelland, in effect challenged the killers, saying that they were scum and that they would find them in whatever hole that they're in, and we're going to bring you back and let the people of Kaufman County prosecute you to the full extent of the law. And then, of course, no sooner had he made those statements on television, he and his wife are murdered in their home. Most fingers are being pointed at the Aryan Brotherhood. Is that your understanding, Mark Potok?
Yeah, not the Aryan Brotherhood, but the Aryan Brotherhood of Texas, which is a distinct group. But, you know, what really happened was the Aryan Brotherhood of Texas is a white supremacist prison gang that was formed in Texas back in the early 1980s. The thing has grown into a major criminal enterprise. But in the last few years, there has been really quite a crackdown on the part of law enforcement on ABT, a crackdown that really culminated last November in a big racketeering indictment in which 34 ABT members were named, including four generals or the group's top leaders. So there's been a real effort to smash the group made. At the same time, the group has developed a reputation as arguably the most violent white supremacist prison gang out there. Its members have been blamed for the murders of over 100 people and as many as 10 kidnappings since they were formed. In any event, after this racketeering indictment of so many of its leaders last fall, the very next month in December, Texas authorities sent out a letter to prosecutors warning them that they had intelligence that ABT, the Aryan Brotherhood of Texas, was planning some kind of retaliation. What it was going to be was not detailed, and we really don't know more about it. But it was only a month after that that the first prosecutor, an assistant district attorney by the name of Mark Huss, was murdered as he got out of his car to go to work in Kaufman County at the county courthouse. Huss, it turned out, had been involved in some of the earlier ABT prosecutions. Then, not long after his death, there was the press conference you mentioned in which his boss, Mike McClelland, really said some pretty challenging things. And then, over this last weekend, almost 2 months to the day after Mark Haas's murder, Mike McClelland and his wife, Cynthia McClelland, were murdered in a similar fashion, a real execution-style murder. Their door kicked down. They were simply sprayed with bullets, apparently from an automatic weapon or perhaps more than one. You know, so that there's no actual evidence in terms of forensic evidence other than the circumstantial evidence I've kind of laid out. But you can see why virtually everyone in Texas law enforcement is thinking that Aryan Brotherhood of Texas is very possibly behind this. And they're looking at them very hard right now.
Well, Mark Potok, apparently the first victim, the assistant prosecutor, Mr. Haas, he was shot the same day that two members of the Aryan Brotherhood of Texas, Ben Christian Dillon, known as Tough, and James Marshall Meldrum, known as Dirty, pleaded guilty of racketeering in federal court in Houston. So Two questions. Are these guys flipping? Have they gone into witness protection? And two, what are these racketeering charges? Do they make money through racketeering, the Aryan Brotherhood of Texas?
Well, first of all, what my understanding, and perhaps I'm wrong, is that they didn't plead on the same day that Haas was murdered. There was a Department of Justice press release which congratulated a number of people, including Mark Haas, for his role in these prosecutions of these two people. So I believe that's what happened, and it was just an irony because, of course, you know, immediately after Haas was killed, you know, people were wondering what in the world is, you know, where could this have come from? And then that came out right away, that he'd been named as having helped this major prosecution and so on. So I'm sorry, the second half of your question.
What are these racketeering, these racketeering charges relate to what kind of rackets? How do they make their money?
They're involved in murders, attempted murders. A lot of that has to do with essentially disciplining their own members and frightening other people. What it's really in service of is an organization that's primarily involved in drug trafficking. ABT's big thing is running methamphetamine and heroin, and to a smaller extent, both cocaine and marijuana. And they're involved in, I think, any number of other kind of criminal schemes and so on. But that seems to be the biggest thing. They're big drug runners, and they've been involved in extortion, leaning on their enemies, extorting from prisoners who are actually in the prison system but not a member of their gang as well. So, you know, they're kind of a mafia, more specialized in drugs than anything else, but obviously a very scary group. I mean, you know, one of the details that came out last fall when these major indictments were announced was that at one point certain shot callers in the ABT, in the Aryan Brotherhood of Texas, had told certain members to go out and kill someone who they thought was cooperating with law enforcement. The killer was instructed by the gang's leaders to bring back the severed finger of his victim as a trophy. So, you know, that's the kind of group we're talking about.
Again, I'm speaking with Mark Potak, as the director of the Southern Poverty Law Center's Intelligence Project and the editor of their quarterly investigative journal, Intelligence Report. In addition to that, he also edits the Hate Watch blog. Now, apparently, in Kaufman County, where these prosecutors were killed, there are a number of meth labs, and that they apparently supply the Dallas area, which is, 20-odd miles away. How much of this is driven by the methamphetamine?
Well, I think a great deal, Ian. I mean, I was a reporter in that area many years ago, and I remember actually going on a tour. I was writing a story about crack cocaine and meth, and that is just the kind of area where methamphetamines are made. It's a very smelly process. The stink is terrible. So making methamphetamines is something that is generally not done in urban areas. It's typically done, you know, a little trailer out in the woods somewhere. And Kaufman County in that area is not heavily settled at all. There's a lot of empty land. You know, there are essentially working-class towns around there. So I think it makes some sense. And in fact, East Texas, which Forney and Kaufman County is considered a part of, is very much, you know, just thick with meth labs and methamphetamine in general. You know, methamphetamine has been considered for a long time kind of the white people's drugs. And it's also the drug that has been run more than any other by white supremacists in this country, both by prison gangs and white supremacists of various stripes on the outside. So that's kind of an interesting detail about that particular drug.
Well, there are reports, Mark Potok, that the Aryan Brotherhood, whether it's the Aryan Brotherhood of Texas or not, I'm not sure, were also involved in the killing of the head of the Colorado prison system, Mr. Clements, who was killed on his doorstep. And the person that ended up in a shootout with the police was a white supremacist gang member and of a different gang. But nevertheless, is there a connection then with what happened in Colorado as well as what's been happening in Texas?
Yeah, it didn't. What happened in Colorado, I think, did not have anything to do with the Aryan Brotherhood or Aryan Brotherhood of Texas that we know of. The killer, we know, or virtually know, was a man named Evan Ebel. I say we know who it was because Evan Ebel was killed in a shootout with Texas police 2 days after the murder in Colorado of the chief of the Department of Corrections. And after his killing, officials matched ballistically his weapon weapon he used in a shootout in Texas with the weapon that was that in fact killed Tom Clements, the head of the DOC, in Colorado. This guy, Evan Ebel, was a member of a white supremacist group called the 211 Crew. The 211 Crew, in the same way that ABT, the Aryan Brotherhood of Texas, is largely limited to Texas, the 211 Crew is a Colorado white supremacist prison gang. So they're different gangs. The question is, might these two regional white supremacist prison gangs, which more or less have adjacent territories and both are involved heavily in dealing drugs and very heavy drugs like methamphetamines, might they have been cooperating in some way? Might they have helped carry out attacks on law enforcement, who they obviously resented greatly, and who had led real efforts to crack down on the gangs in you know, the relatively recent past? That's what we don't know. There's no evidence to say that that's true. The intriguing details are the fact that Evan Ebel, who, as I say, murdered the chief of the DOC in Colorado, and then was killed 2 days later in Texas. Well, you know, the intriguing piece is that where he was killed in Texas was a mere 100 miles from Kaufman, a city which is the capital of Kaufman County. And, you know, that's not a terribly populated part of the world. It's about, as you mentioned, about 30 miles east of Dallas. But those are the kind of wastelands out there. I know the area. There's not a lot going on out there. So it's a bit surprising that you would find him there. And the other piece of it is simply the fact that the FBI in Colorado has said that they are looking at the possibility of a link. You know, they've not suggested that they think there is one, or that they have any particular evidence, but, you know, all of these events so close together in time and not all that far apart in terms of distance obviously has got authorities concerned and looking into it.
So, Mark Potok, how do these gangs like the Aryan Brotherhood operate in the sense that they mostly, from what I understand, just as also true of the El Salvadoran MS-13 gang, they seem to operate largely from prison, at least, you know, as much of their infrastructure is inside prison as it is outside. And you mentioned a bunch of generals were caught up in this big indictment that went down November last year, and that may have led to the shooting of both of these prosecutors, one of whom was congratulated for his role in it, as you just mentioned. I'm trying to figure this out. What is wrong with the prison system that would allow such violent gangs to essentially operate from inside custody? And when, you know, everybody says, well, we're taking the bad guys off the street. Well, you may be taking them off the street, but they might as well be in their offices.
Well, I think there are really two things going on. One is that as these gangs essentially age, we're seeing increasing numbers of them getting released, even at the end of very long prison terms, and being back on the streets. So, increasingly in the last several years, we've seen gangs that were formerly very largely confined to the prisons spilling out onto the streets, into our communities, and bringing all kinds of violent mayhem with them. The other piece of it is that it is true that the leaders of these gangs, by and large, are in prison more or less forever. I mean, the vast majority of them are serving life sentences for one crime or another. So you're right. I mean, there's something going on here. The fact is the leaders of these gangs are able to direct criminal enterprises in a very large number of cases from their prison cells. And that is true even in many cases where they're serving life sentences, sometimes even in solitary confinement. You know, what we know is that the gangs generally have devised very sophisticated codes, both verbal codes for talking on the telephone and written codes for letters. In addition, at least some of the gangs have used their women, their wives, their girlfriends, and so on, to relay messages to the outside, and even in some cases their lawyers. So through a variety of methods, these guys are in fact able to direct criminal activity. You know, it's so bad that a few years ago, and this is the Aryan Brotherhood, not the Aryan Brotherhood of Texas, there was a major federal indictment of a bunch of members of the Aryan Brotherhood. This is in California. And what prosecutors said at the time was almost all of the people they indicted were already in prison, many of them serving life sentences. They were trying to get them the death penalty. And the reason wasn't because the prosecutors were so bloodthirsty. The reason was the prosecutors said they could not control these people in prison. They could lock them down in solitary and do all these things, and yet they were still doing things like ordering hits, ordering assassinations on the outside, and other kinds of criminal activity. So, I mean, I think that's an incredible story because it tells you that very serious prosecutors feel, at least in the case of many of these gangs, that they've got to kill the leadership if they're going to stop the crimes that they are directing, even from inside the prison walls.
Well, Mark, I remember many years ago where there was a horrible crime in Texas where a black man was dragged behind a pickup truck to his death. And the father of one of the young white guys that was responsible for this grisly murder said in defense of his son, he said, look, my son wasn't the same person because he was sent to jail for some minor delinquency. And the only way he could survive in the prison was to hook up with the Aryan Brotherhood to protect his life from other prison gangs, all of whom are based on along race lines, it appears, and that thus he was recruited into this psychotic, murderous gang.
And he was right. He was right. That did happen with the two of the killers, in fact, were in prison in Texas and did go in on quite minor charges, or relatively minor charges, and just as you say, were inducted into the gangs. And, you know, look, it used to be some years ago that prisoners joined these gangs simply as a matter of self-protection because you more or less have to if you're going to be in for many years. Otherwise, the likelihood of you being attacked or raped or even killed is really very high. So enormous numbers of inmates do join these gangs. In years past, it used to be fairly routine that, you know, somebody finished serving their sentence, they'd walk out and forget all about the Aryan Brotherhood or whatever gang it was they joined. That, I think, is less true now. As a general matter, the gangs are basically insisting that people stay in the gangs and continue to work for them. I know, for instance, that in the case of the 211 crew, the Colorado prison gang, that they actually have as part of their rules a requirement that when inmates are released who are a member of their gang, that they go out in the streets and, quote-unquote, start to earn again and return that money in one way or another to the leadership of the gang. So, you know, what I'm saying is that, yes, increasingly these guys are out there and really scary.
Well, they certainly have the prosecutors down in Texas quite alarmed, and they're all, of course, being protected by ATF, Texas Rangers, FBI, and local police. So just in closing, Mark, though, this conversation's really turned more about our prison system in a sense, since that's where these gangs operate from and that's how where they recruit their members. What does it say? I mean, how can they call themselves the Department of Corrections? They're not correcting anything. They're actually, sounds like the school for psychopaths.
Well, you know, there's something to that. You know, to try and be fair to correctional officials, I think it's a hell of a problem for them. It's been incredibly difficult. They've tried very hard to tie down these gangs, to prevent them from running criminal enterprises, and they just haven't been that successful. You know, some of the techniques that are used by the gangs are really sophisticated. I mean, they have a very elaborate, for instance, invisible inks, that kind of thing. So, you know, I'm not disputing anything you say. It's absolutely true. I mean, it's a scary thing that, you know, many times, or at least a certain percentage of times, you know, young people go into the prison system. They're not racist at all, or not particularly racist, and they come out as hardened race warriors, not to mention in the service of gangs that are really engaged in major crimes. So, yeah, I think it's true. I mean, American prisons are by and large not a terrific place to get rehabilitated.
Well, just in closing, though, does this tie into your recent report in any way about the growth of the militias?
I don't think so. Because of the militias and the other groups on the extreme right on the outside, as you kind of mentioned in your intro, really their growth is being driven by a black man in the White House, the racial change that that black man represents, the loss of a white majority in this country and so on, the very bad economy and all those kinds of things. I think these prison gangs live, you know, kind of exist in a universe of their own. I can't say. I think they probably have been growing, but I think the most noticeable thing is that their power is now extending onto the street, that they seem incredibly vicious, and if, in fact, any of these killings we're discussing turn out to have been carried out by prison gangs, they are incredibly brazen in a way that they haven't been in the past.
Well, if, for all intents and purposes, they're declaring a war on law enforcement.
I think that's right. I think if these really are assassinations, it is a kind of declaration of war, and we haven't seen the last of it.
Well, Mark Potok, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
A real pleasure, Ian.
Again, I mean, speaking with Mark Potok, who's the director of the Southern Poverty Law Center's Intelligence Project and editor of its award-winning quarterly investigative journal, Intelligence Report. In addition to editing the magazine and the Hate Watch blog, Potok acts as a key spokesperson for the Southern Poverty Law Center, a well-known civil rights organization based in Alabama. He has testified before the Senate, the United Nations High Commission on Human Rights, and other venues. And the Southern Poverty Law Center recently released a new report, The Return of the Militias, which documents how, after vanishing for nearly 10 years, the anti-government militia movement is surging across the country, fueled by fears of a black president, the changing demographics of the country, and fringe conspiracy theories increasingly spread by mainstream figures. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.